Hi, and welcome to episode 66 of Fully Boosted War Machine Hordes Podcast. I'm Grant.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Brad.
I'm Mike.
Ooh, Mike and Pete.
Ooh, Mike and Pete. Yeah.
Hey, everybody.
Mike's back.
That's not how we do things.
I was going to introduce you, but that's all right. Coming off of his defending Mid-Atlantic team tournament championship, no help to him in the last round, the Mike Ireland. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, guys.
How are you, man?
Doing pretty good.
On a scale of one to high to fuck right now, how are you, Mike?
No, doing good. I've got a beer here that is finishing from leftover from dinner and ready to podcast.
You got a hurricane?
No hurricane.
He doesn't
today.
Drink shitty malt liquor when he's just like on his days off.
I don't know what he's into.
Well, sometimes.
Yeah, well, right. Like, they're so cheap.
Oh, God.
So we're going to jump into the mat in a second, but a little news and announcements. Privateer Press did their end of year CID Insider, where they kind of gave a glimpse into what they're going to cover next year. So we know that Ogryn is next. After that is Manowar and Kador, then Crucible Guard, then Menoth with the Exemplars, Circle with Tharn, and then Merc Pirates. You will note and there is no Rhett on there.
Just to clarify, that was Legion Blighted Ogryn.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I figured by this point everybody knew that, but I guess I should have specified.
There could be somebody.
Sure. Mike, I'll start with you, because I see no Rhett on there. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, so this is the kind of beginning of what the new Privateer Press release cycle is going to look like. They've been interspersing, like, one or two models or adjustments here and there, so it's not quite as much like doom and gloom as people have been posting about. But this is what a single faction release looks like. This is the model that Games Workshop has used for years, and it's not necessarily so. A lot of the, like, there's a huge post on the Rhett Facebook that the mods ended up deleting. The salinity got a little too high for everyone, I think. But this is kind of the face of what it looks like. And when you have a single faction release cycle like they're moving towards, you're going to have a leapfrog effect where, you know, the newest updated faction is definitely going to have the significant advantage over the ones that are left behind.
Do you think, though, that the bonuses that, I shouldn't say bonuses, but like the benefits that CID brings puts them into a stronger power field, or just brings them into like more diverse choices?
Oh, it's both. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to look at things that need reworking or that aren't taken as much. They're going to make them better. And they're also going to introduce new options to the faction. So there's definitely just a flat marked increase in power after a CID cycle.
So, I mean, is that definitively true? I mean, like, yeah. And I'm not definitely not crying as a Crix player, but I mean, like, Denegra 1's on the downtick. They're making Satixis mildly. I say that mildly, like, not true, but like for the things that are already out, like, they're changing up definitively, and the Sea Witches get more expensive without really gaining anything.
Yeah, but
were they
undercosted
before? Sure.
I mean, Slaughter Fleet, like, is going to be amazing.
Sure. Like, I don't disagree. But what I'm getting at is, like, the stuff that's already out just isn't across the board only gets better.
Right, so yeah, I guess if you want to make an argument, they are addressing the strongest warcaster in the game and toning that down a little bit, so we can complain about that for a minute if you'd like. But overall, I think the faction is getting stronger, yeah.
I feel like you just dismissed everything I said, but it's all right.
Yeah, no, they're making some adjustments to Crix. There's some well-deserved adjustments, but they're also introducing new options that's going to expand them even further. You know, that's going to continue to push them towards the top.
But what I'm getting at is, I use Crix as an example because, one, I know them the best, and two, it's what just happened. What I'm getting at is CID isn't only just take the bottom and bring it up, it's also look at the top and tone it down a couple of degrees.
For Crix.
Yeah, sure. the question, though, is...
But, like, same thing happens in Stormlances, like...
Yeah.
So the Stormlands adjustment was kind of lateral. I think that argument's a little bit of a wash. They made them better into some things and worse in other things. So they were definitely worse in the lists that people were bringing them in, but it kind of honed and refined their kind of role in the game.
Yeah, I don't feel as a Signar player that I came out of my CID any worse. Although I will agree with Brad's, I did not feel that outside of Haley 3, the Trencher release and maybe Triumph was so amazing that I was like, ooh, Signar is right back on top. This is great. Everything's fucking awesome. Maybe
because you're not playing a blockhouse.
It's probably true, Pete. It's probably true.
So I think there's an important point distinction here in that the CID does not automatically rocket somebody to the front. But it's definitely an overall improvement. So what you end up with, you know, that's why I say a leapfrog effect in a sense that, you know, you don't necessarily jump to the front.
Sure.
But the ones that haven't been updated get left behind and they slowly tick down towards, you know, and somebody has to be last. So every cycle, every season, there's always going to be a last updated faction and people are going to complain about that voraciously for the end of time. It's one of the disadvantages of this style of releases.
Yep, and we actually talked about that about like 45 episodes ago whenever they first announced that, that and said that that was going to be a problem for some people where, you know, I mean, look at what happened with the theme dump. If they didn't do that theme dump and kept releasing themes slowly but surely, you'd have had another 6 months before some factions had fucking themes to play. I mean, and it's going to be a similar thing with the book release where if you were the last book to come out, you were going to be waiting a year and a half, you know, you're going to wait a year and a half to get your CID because now we're not doing books anymore, obviously. But so let me jump back to the ret thing, because I mean, you're not going to get a CID. You're going to get your one model because we know they're going to do the 12 factions thing again next year. So you will get something. Do you feel, is that concerning as a ret player with the stagnation of like, okay, so here's my shit for the next year and a half to 2 years. Like, here's what I got.
So the stagnation is less of a concern. You know, I think the faction is deep enough that there's enough options and you know, available things. The bigger problem is how garbage, you know, the majority of our theme lists are.
Sure.
The theme release was very, very soft for Retribution in particular. I think Retribution and Circle suffered the most from the release of themes. It's a little frustrating to be shuffled to the end of the CID development cycle, unless they're going to sprinkle in themes along the way, which doesn't seem to be their plan so far. So it's not looking super great right now.
Do you think you might end up in, and I say you because, you know, it's Rhett, but do you think that something might end up in some of the dynamic updates? Like if they see that, and again, you said stagnation might happen, but if they see that Rhett's having trouble and starting to taper off, let's say they stop seeing sales and stuff, do you think that they'd end up in the dynamic update to try to maybe fix some of the stuff that's there?
It does not appear to be that performance on the table has anything to do with their release cycle right now. Why is Circle so far back? Why is Rhett so far back? Why were Crix and Signar first? Are kind of questions that point to that one. They may sprinkle stuff in just based on their kind of already, you know, their already predetermined path. There have been rumors floating around at a small or like a minor Dawn Guard update, particularly looking at the Desters, which have been trash since they've been released and then got nerfed in Mark 3 for some reason. So there may be some adjustments there. But I don't think they're going to do anything based on, you know, tournament results or performance.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand it working in like with software, releases. Like I understand that development cycles can be 3 to 5 to 10 years out. So, you know, they don't change based on a faction being shitty. It's, you know, these were the models that were going to get released then. And that's, you know, they go into production. And
yeah.
We do this. So, I mean, that part I get, but I can certainly understand the frustration of looking and going, so I didn't have one in 2017, and I'm not going to have one in 2018 unless there's something sprinkled in randomly into a dynamic update. I don't know.
Is there another faction that's in that boat? Not counting Scorn, because they got the whole overhaul.
Circle's pretty close, just because it sounds like they're towards the end of their announced release cycle. And Circle has the exact same problems. It's not that there's anything inherently wrong with the faction itself, but there's their theme lists are just basically unplayable.
For the most part. Yeah, there's they're not in a great place either. And then, I mean, we know Crucible Guard. We know that's going to take what was the Grimkin CID, like a month? So we know that's a long one, whereas the rest have been 2 weeks.
Oh, also COC. They're not getting any love.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, I don't know if it's just that I've been deadened to that, like, kind of not expecting it. But, yeah, no, I don't believe that they're –
You got Eilish and Orion.
Everybody got Eilish. That's not a COC thing. Now, we did get Orion, so I can't complain about that. It would have been nice to see the faction go into a CAD or kind of like just a refreshing point. But I assume we'll get the one model a year with the 12 factions of Christmas if they keep doing that. But past that, no, I don't actually ever expect to see convergence in a CID state. I could hopefully I'm wrong with that. Maybe they come back to it, but I very much doubt it.
Yeah, I do find it interesting that when you look and you go Menoth, Circle, Mercs, and then no Ret, like right down the line, I feel like that's all factions. I mean, Mercs was and Menoth, I guess when Menoth got that bump, it's a little bit different, but I don't know. This is one of the problems with this type of release, you know? I mean, look at, like, okay, Signar, we got our stuff, and now we know we probably won't have anything till 2019. And that's fine, because I'm not complaining relative to the other factions that haven't had one. But I don't know. I was always a fan of the one book a year, and everybody gets something, you know? I don't know. I thought that was cool. All right, anybody have anything else on that, or we want to jump into the mat?
Let's jump in the mat.
Okay, great. So this past weekend, the Mid-Atlantic Team Tournament happened. If you weren't paying attention, we used German-style team pairings. I'm not going to explain what that was again, but...
I think one thing to say before we get too far into it
is
thank you to Devin Mayer and company.
Yes. Yes, I didn't know everybody's name, but the judges were great. They kept us moving. They kept everything. They kept the flow. They made everybody get their sheets in and move on to the next round. They were all. I mean, we were playing on two different floors, and even when I was upstairs, I never had a problem getting a judge to come over to the table. So I thought they did a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, especially with the PG program kind of falling to the wayside, we always appreciate judge staff that come out and help run our events.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to recap, myself, Brad, and Ryan were a team. Pete had himself, Rich Filson, and his son, and Mike was with Klinger and Harrison. So we're not going to do a full recap just because we have too many of us, but I think we'll hit anything. Did anybody's round one stand out of being exciting as far as super worth talking about?
No, I played a relatively interesting, but no, that's all right.
Yeah, this is hard. Like, I played Seth Cohen, always a pleasure to play him. I put Cole Grima into Karchev, and it was really bad for me. And that was pretty much the highlight, or that set the tone for the rest of the day. So, you know, it was interesting games. I'm still trying to wrap my head around Cole Grima and what works best with her.
Sure.
So it was good to get some reps in with her. And like I said, it's always a pleasure to play.
Well, let's run Cole through. We can at least do this part. So we got matched up against two priests and a butcher, which was Jason Ellsworth-Altz, Paul Mislinski, and Rob Rawlings. We ended up winning. I was lucky enough. Rob had kind of misplaced Sorsha and ended up leaving her out, kind of dick in the wind, instead of being in behind his wall or in the cover. I was able to get my Stormstriders within 10 inches of her, and I needed to roll two boosted dents, and I did exactly that we ended up winning. I won, Brad won, Ryan, you lost, right?
Oh yeah. So I was playing this. I'm still not sure if it's janky or not, which I guess means it is janky, but it's all the unloved lightning jacks in Convergence that have Plasma Nimbus, and then the Colossal that also has Plasma Nimbus. The list worked pretty much exactly how I expected it to. I had no problem clearing off infantry, and when he came to take my 10-point heavies to be able to score at all, he lost half a squad to just trying to take the things out. I just clocked myself. That was my MO pretty much that entire list in there. I just couldn't make the attacks and damage rolls fast enough to get out of to keep going. I couldn't get the pacing right of the list, basically.
Brad, you won on scenario?
I played an Egger 1 to Testament. I was playing in Scourge. So I have RFP on a stick between Blood Witches, and I took double Gunslingers. So I was forcing self-sacks, and Tenegra 1 feed is a kick in the dick, so I won on scenario.
So we won. Pete, you guys lost, I believe?
Yeah, we faced the Boca Brawlers. So I lost against Seth, against Karchev. Attilio won his game against, oh God, this
Henry
is why I didn't want
Steve.
To. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't remember his name. Henry. He was playing mercenaries, and then Rich lost to Rabideau, that minx.
That minx.
So, yeah, he was one of the eight ret players that we had.
Jesus, ton of ret
group.
Was that it?
Yeah. For our meta, you'd never think ret was like on a down tick at all with our meta.
So Mike, how about your guys' round one? You don't have to go into Klinger or Harrison's game, you know, at all if you don't know how they did, but your overall, like, who did you guys get matched up against, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, sure. So our first round matchup was against Yellow Team Field Day. I believe Klinger lost that one. The games kind of merged together, sure. But you're better off just betting that Klinger lost. Harrison and I carried it through. Klinger did amazing in the final round when it mattered, so let's just get that out of the way now.
That's true.
Would not have won without Klinger. It was just a rough go at it along the way. My game was against lovely Chris Chambers. It was Strakoff 2 versus, I believe, Ossian. I had a new-ish Ossian list that I'm pretty excited about that I've been kind of refining and dropping that into as much as I can. And it was just kind of a miserable attrition grind for him. The Ossian list runs the Rasovas defenders, which are steady and tough most of the time, as well as two battle engines. So it's a very difficult list to kind of dig out an attrition against. And things just started sliding away from him as the game went on.
Did you ever get to live the dream, Mike, and play that into Ghost Fleet?
Oh, yeah. So that happened in... wasn't this list in particular, but somebody did drop Ghost Fleet into Ossian at it was a tournament up in Bethlehem, I think.
Oh, at Portal?
No, it wasn't Portal.
Well, girls, what happened in the game?
Yeah, it was against this guy from Buffalo, I believe, and he had it was Denegra 1 into Ossian, and I believe he conceded at the bottom of turn 2.
Yep.
There wasn't very many models left on the table on his side, and I don't think he'd killed anything yet.
Well, that seems bad.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just a little. So you guys end up winning. Another note, our buddies over at Battle Driven lost round one as well, so we were we're feeling good going into round two. Unfortunately for us, we get paired up against Struggle Snuggle. That was round two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So how did our conversation go there? Do you remember, Brad, who we put down face first? Face down, excuse me.
We put me down because I couldn't play into Mike. That was like our worst. Like, so the way we did our pairings was we figured out like what was the worst drop into the like out of the six lists versus six lists, and I didn't think I had a list that could beat Ossian, so I thought we decided that I was the worst shot, so I went face down. Available for me to pick from were Mike and Klinger, or Ireland and Klinger, So I took Klinger, putting Ireland in the middle table. And then you guys put Harrison face down, and we put Ryan into, or you guys took Ryan, putting Grant in the middle.
Yeah, so what was, I'm just curious, Mike, since we're all together, what was your process for either this round or all the rounds? Like, how did you guys decide who you were going to put down and pick and et cetera?
It was kind of similar. We were putting down to deflect bad matchups.
Right.
So it was kind of a sense, it's a bit weird how we approached it. But we had put down somebody that felt the most confident into most of the things, and then use that to siphon off of the bad matchups in the rando pairing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So like, if there was somebody that was like worried about something, we'd put them down, and then reshuffle things around based on that one. I think we went with Harrison most of the time. He was a little bit less practiced in general. But his lists also haven't changed in ages, which isn't a bad thing. They're good lists. So Harrison was kind of our anchor most of the time. We were putting.
What do you mean, most? Wasn't he the only player on the team to go 4-0?
He was. Yeah. I
meant what do you mean he was the anchor most of the time? He was the anchor.
He was the anchor. This year, he was the anchor. Last year, we had to carry him throughout the entire fucking tournament. It was absolutely insane. Dead weight.
So it ended up being Brad into Klinger, Ryan into Harrison, and Mike and I had the pleasure of having a wonderful game. So Brad, let's start with you. Just a little quick recap of your game was over, I think, relatively quick.
Yeah, so I have a list full of magic weapons, and I threat farther than his shit, so Gremlin Swarms don't concern me, and he has to move into my threat range for things to be relevant. And then as additional kick in the dick, I have Denegra 1. So when I already threatened farther, I now like double threat range on my feet turn. Guess what? I went on scenario. So.
All right, great. Good talk. Seems great for him. Ryan, how about you?
Butcher 3 is still an issue, and it was the funny part was he was playing a list that was very similar to one right before I put Cador down that I was starting to look at, and it's as brutal as I figured it would be, and I misplayed a couple things. I got lucky with some shooting and took a bunch of heavies off the table, and I left two Marauders on a few hitboxes with my Colossal right there. So that didn't go well for me at all. And then Butcher's just there to absolutely clean up. So yeah, it was pretty brutal.
So we're 1-1, and it's up to me to defeat the tyrant that is Mike Ireland. Mike, you chose to drop Ossian, which I was intrigued about. I was pretty sure I was going to get Alara, but I didn't know if you were just worried that Siege 1 was going to kill all the Halbs, because I wasn't sure if I could do that or not, which is what I was nervous about. So what was your thought with the Ossian drop?
So that's definitely a piece of it, is the Halberdier spam list into...
Well, why does Mike have a strange echo?
It's me. It's my shitty mic.
He turned into a robot.
It's my microphone. It's not him.
We were warned.
Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
All right. So the Siege list does have a very real chance of killing all of the things on Siege's feet turn. Every E-Leap halves the armor, and I've got a lot of dudes that I can't spread out far enough to avoid that one. So the other thing, like I said before, I was considering, like, I just kind of wanted to see what the Ossian list does into different things. And it's not necessarily, you know, it wasn't like a cheese drop, like I'm going to win no matter what, but I didn't think the matchup was going to be as bad for me as it turned out. It was kind of one of those games where halfway through, you know, by like turn two, I'm looking at the table like, oh fuck, I'm going to lose type thing. And I had to start to backpedal a little bit and really adjust some things that I was doing to make sure that I didn't just lose all of my stuff immediately and punt the game.
Yeah, so I kind of, just because you're here, we'll go in a little more detail about this game than some of the others because we might be able to piece it together between the two of us. So I kind of made the decision to walk Siege, put him on a hill, put him in a foxhole with Arcane Shield, knowing that you could probably shoot me, but I, you know, I'm 14, so I'm a 20 on the hill. Was that what the math that we ended up doing, right? 14 on a hill, 16 plus in a trench. Yeah. So 20-20 with Arcane, with some focus. So I, because I think it was what, turn two, when you looked at me and you're like, oh, Grant, like, don't make me have to do it.
Yeah. So, and give people a little bit of background on the lists. It was Ocean with two battle engines, Nis Hunters and Defenders versus Siege with two battle engines. Two Chargers, two Fireflies, is that right?
Three Chargers, two Fireflies, and Triumph.
There you go.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's kind of the core of what the lists were running into each other. So, yeah, there was a period where Grant was on the hill. The important factors there is that Hypnos ignores the cover.
Right.
So your only defense 16. I need a boosted 10 to hit. Shadowbound.
I think I had disrupted both your jacks, so you could make him. One of them could be undisrupted because you had one mechanic, so you could have got that and then boosted the Hypno shot into me, right?
Yeah, I think my other jack was a Manticore, he was smashed anyway, so
yeah.
It would have been Hypnos and maybe Ocean. He gives another minus two, but I think I didn't have enough. Because you had the shield guard, and I was going to have to use one of my battle engines to hit that one away, knock it down, had one less shot than I would have liked in order to make that one work.
Yeah. I think I end up feeding, and I take one of your ticks off the table. I also kill some Nis. Your jacks basically became a non-factor. And then I just started not doing what I need to do when you're up on attrition. And I just did not start playing for scenario. and Aelith Veer is my fucking misery.
Aelith Veer is the MVP of that
oh
game.
My God. Oh my God. Just watching that was so painful.
Yeah.
It's like one thing to look at the stats and go, wow, this could be absolutely ludicrous. It's another thing to watch it happen on the table and just be like, oh.
Yeah, it's another thing to throw a shit ton of attacks into this guy and just keep toughing and keep moving closer to things that you care about and then also be contesting your flag, and it just, like, ruins your life.
And the one thing, like, with your list, Grant, is there's no, like, low-value attacks.
No.
Like, there's no, like, oh, I'll just use my throwaway this to, like,
yeah,
go clear Aelith, hopefully. No, everything's like a shot off a jack and or like a ground pounder, and that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I mean, the Fireflies and maybe Strangeways and Junior would be like the four potential throwaway attacks that I have that I don't necessarily care about all the time. But yeah, there is not a lot of attacks that I want to throw into a piece of shit solo that's in my face, you know, walking around killing things.
That was the best. I think he made three or four consecutive tough checks, like, over the course of the game.
Yeah.
In addition to three dice snakes shot from your, what was it, the journeyman tried to shoot him.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool, too. We ended up getting in a place where Mike was up on scenario. He was able to get us, take my one battle engine out, get Ossian into a zone, and start scoring. And I instead of playing scenario, I went for an assassination because I didn't think I had enough to come back. And I just couldn't clear off the Risavas to be able to take a shot with the charger. And to be honest, I don't know that I had enough at that point anyway. I mean, I don't know. You were sitting on, what, seven, but you still had focus. So I'm not sure. So I couldn't pull it out. But I felt I played a really good game into you, and I was really happy going forward.
Absolutely. I think that was easily the tightest game that we've had together.
Yeah.
And probably one of my closest games. You know, I lost the one, but this is my closest game of the event, I think.
Cool. So I can walk away morally proud, I guess, but we ended
next
up
time you win that shit though.
I know. I should have. I don't know. My tunnel my tunnel vision just clicked in, and I just started not doing the things that I needed to do. I got nervous and just couldn't handle it. So, Pete, let's go over to you. How was your guys' round two?
Yeah, we're not going to do a full rundown of the event. We're doing a full rundown of the event.
Just quick. That was the only game we're going to do that in depth. I mean, we only have two more rounds after this, and then we'll,
just
you know.
I'm just fucking with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I went to the drink machine. I tried to buy some water, but it said it was sold out, even though there was water in there.
Oh, dude, that drink machine was everybody's bane that entire time.
Okay, so round two, we pulled the King of Trains and the Choo Choo Crew. That was Nate, Corey, and Rich Owens. So just to put things in perspective, I was playing Trolls. My son Attilio was playing Grimkin, and Rich was playing Circle. The King of Trains and Choo Choo Crew had Nate with Legion, Rich with Scorn, and Corey was one of the Dirty Eight rep players. So nice. Right away, we're looking and we're like, oh my God, no one wants Nate. No one wants him. He's playing Abby 2, and it doesn't fucking matter. He's got Abby 2. We know what we're getting. So I figured Cole Grima had the best tools to try to deal with that. And plus two, there's a standing joke. I've never played Rich Owens at all. And so we're not going to start at the mat. So it was like, I need to dodge Rich. And, I sacrificed myself to Nate. It was a sacrifice. Abby two is still good. It doesn't matter if you take away, flight or eyeless sight. Cause what he did was he said, okay, fine. I'm restricted. I'm just going to go ahead and score two scenario points, and be ahead. And so then that caused me to commit my stuff, in an unfavorable way to try to make up on scenario. So that was an interesting game for sure. I think I was left with Cole Grima and a Rune Bearer. Yeah, that's all I was left with. It was one of those turns where I'm like, okay, he's going to feat and he's going to take three heavies. No, he feated, took four and a light. So yeah, good game. We ended up losing that round. As kind of expected. But yeah, good round.
All right. Mike, we'll start with you. Who did you guys have round three?
You were playing the Maryland guys, right?
Yeah, we ended up against the Molly Whoppers round three. I believe, and oh, I hope I don't make them mad, but I think I played the sacrifice that round. It seemed like they were pretty put off by my lists, and I ended up playing Alara 2, triple halberdiers into Grimkin Heretic, which doesn't typically end too well for Grimkin.
Yeah, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, because the big thing there is they can't put rebuke on you because you have the speed to avoid it, right?
That and the spell becomes range 5.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's a whole number of problematic factors in that matchup. The speed. So I outrange some of their arcana. Sometimes they like to take the arcana that stops orders, which doesn't work against Rhett because we just go too far. The rebuke is reduced range, and even if you do get a rebuke off, you get to the Solas can clear it, so it just kind of delays them for a turn. Yeah, they still get the shield wall because I can.
Does the rebuke do it
first.
As a star action to clear it?
So I can't charge that turn. Yeah, but I can just pull back and shield wall that turn instead.
Yeah. Huh. Still seems good. Still compared to what they want you to do nothing. So to still be able to do something is bad.
Yeah, that's
right.
The
other thing is, Grimkin has a hard time killing the Rhett battle engine, and then we were allowing the new Christmas stuff in the mat. So I had two of the sirens, which crash in at power 18 with Alara. So they come in really, really hard.
Those things are fucking really good.
Just the fact power 18, it's like it's a light.
It's 8 fucking points.
Like, are you kidding me? Oh God,
it's crazy.
So we're counting Dark Shroud. It's technically only power 16.
Sure.
That's fair.
I'm not feeling any better.
Yeah, I'm not.
This is why you're not getting a CID.
Yeah, literally, like you're the reason you're not getting the faction's not getting a CID.
Probably.
That's might be true.
Come to Crix, Mike.
No, don't do that. We'd all be sad. So carry on, Mike. How did you guys? I mean, I know you won, obviously, but Did you end up? So you won your game. How did the other two jerks do?
Yeah, I'm looking at the list now and trying to remember. Might have been.
Well, we know Harrison won.
Yeah, yeah, Harrison won. Right. I think that was another Harrison wins, Klinger loses round.
We're just assuming.
So that yeah, Klinger fought into the Troll Mountain. Donnie brought two really nightmarish troll lists with Madrak 1 and Madrak 3.
That seems like it could be absolutely nasty.
Yeah, one.
Well, the
one
Madrak 3 list was the one with the three units of
Korea Warriors.
Korea Warriors, yeah.
And then a Glacier King. Yeah, I was not looking for. If we got them, I was not. That was somebody when I wrote my list out that I was like, I don't fucking know what I'm doing into that. That looks awful.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of Klinger sentiments. And then Harrison played a really, really hard fought Butcher 3 into Harbinger.
Yep.
For the win.
So we got grossly overconfident, which was Brian Cortese. Who was – I didn't know the other
– Russ and Cole Westbrook.
Right, Russ Batten and Cole Westbrook. So I ended up getting Brian. He was playing Minions. I thought that Siege 1 was going to be fine into all the Gators. He dropped Maylock and I think the armor stacking. I think there just was enough that I couldn't kill enough things before he was in my face. And because of unyielding and the amount of boxes the Gators have, it's too much for me to clear off even with a Stormstrider and Chargers. And he was it, that I just could not come back from that once he was in my face. I didn't kill enough things. So I lost. Brad?
Yeah, so this was like my best game. It was my loss of the weekend, but my best game of the weekend as well. I played against Cole, who just moved back to the States after, I believe, living in Scotland. Was one of the Scottish WTC players. He was playing Haley 3 and Gravediggers. I played Lich 2. So he would go forward Cloudwall and then repo backwards, and I would move forward and drop clouds on his clouds. So that when he would activate his next turn, if he wanted to walk forward, he would put Continuous Corrosion on his Trenchers. I was actually winning on scenario. I'd taken his objective. I think I had 3 points to his two. I didn't respect the amount of damage that Haley could do just by herself. Haley, like the original Haley, not baby or grandma, wasn't necessarily. Oh no, she wasn't range, but didn't need her. But there was a couple. There's like four different things I could have done differently to not have lost that game. I misplaced a Bane Rider, allowing a slam in my caster. So that placement should have happened differently. I had the ability to camp more focused if I didn't want to place down one of the last clouds. I could have also – I went in very deep with the Wraith engine, which ended up working out, and I made a Machine Wraith and moved one of the Grenadiers off into Bumblefuck. So if he was farther back, then I have plus two armor against all those shenanigans. But really, the thing that was the best option of all of these, it took dice completely out of the equation, is instead of placing down the last cloud I placed, I spend two focus, I teleport backwards, and then nothing is in range. But everything up to that point was is an absolute astounding game. Cole's great. Playing against Haley 3 is certainly, a little bit of a learning experience, and I enjoyed it.
Yep. Playing Brian was also great, too. He took a little hiatus from the game, so he's getting back in. So local guy, that's really great to get back into the game. And then Ryan, real quick.
Yeah, so I went into this. I just clocked myself in that round one on clocking issue and stuff. And after that game, I talked to Jason. He's like, yeah, going into this, because I played these lists before. He's like, yeah, I was going to clock you or I was going to lose.
Yep.
So I'm sitting there going, wow, I guess it's that much of a problem for me. So I went into this game and turn one and two, I specifically was just like, you know what? This is my prey target. It's a Krix without the Bane, the heavy cav. This is what this list is meant to absolutely prey on. And I was just like, you know what? Everything moves forward. I'm just going to move to where I think it's going to go and we'll see how it goes. And it was absolutely atrocious. He had Denegra 1 with a bunch of Statixis. The Shattered Coast theme, and they're all single wound models with low armor. I wasn't even having to roll damage on the Plasma Nimbuses, and their damage output wasn't significantly high enough to end me quickly enough that he didn't have to deal with it. They don't have CRA or CMA. They don't have any way of like really just making getting around it. So I just threw four heavies at him and said, if Denegra moves anywhere within 20 inches of my Colossal, I kill her. I have outs for stealth. I have outs for magic or for incorporeal. I have outs for pretty much everything. So then that's what happened. Denegra, he played a very safe game with Denegra. And I completely obliterated his infantry. By the end of the game, the only model he had left was Denegra, and I went and scored up to 8 control points instead of even trying for an assassination.
Good. Nice. Pete,
how was your clock at the end of that game, Ryan?
Ooh, good.
I think I had almost 12 minutes? Or no, because the last turn, I started dicking around at the end. I want to say I stopped caring about it. I had like 12 minutes left, and he had like 6 Satixis and... the Arc Node and Denegra. So I basically was like, all right, I'm going to spend 10 minutes and start scoring. Instead of chasing her around the table, I'm going to start scoring. So really good. It went perfectly fine. My clock was fine.
Yeah, that's great. Because that is definitely a win condition to think about when you're looking at your matchup. It's not necessarily something that you want to like cheese. You definitely want to like bad manners your opponent and try and chat them up and like intentionally run their clock down. But if it gets to like turn 2 or turn 3 and you realize you have a significant clock advantage, you can definitely start adjusting your play style and just like feeding them and over trading, forcing them to do stuff and, you know, kind of running their clock down based off of that one. Because when it's going to go 7 turns, as long as you don't lose scenario in 7 turns, you know, that's something that you definitely want to think about as you're playing and as you're looking at your games, because it does pop up from time to time.
Yep.
All right, so Pete, how about you guys?
Yep, we faced Yellow Team Field Day. So I believe I got matched up with, and I apologize if you guys are listening. I think it was Chris, the Cater player. Rich had, God, I don't even remember who he had. I'm trying to think.
It was Mark playing Protectorate or Steve playing Circle.
Attilio had Steve with Circle, and Rich had the Protectorate player. So my pairing was Kolgrimma and Borka 1 in the Storm of the North theme.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris had Sorsha 1 and Strakov 2. And so I went ahead and gambled that he was going to drop Sorsha 1. So I put down Borka 1. And we revealed, and I was like, okay, this is going to be bad. I had 2 models that his feet could affect. And we just played the game. We rolled some dice, and I just, you know, I was able to just shut him down. Because unfortunately, rockets aren't going to do much into me. And it you know, just a 5-0 victory, because unfortunately, there was nothing he could really do. And I felt bad about it, but, you know, that's the gamble.
Yeah.
And then Attilio won his match, and I don't remember if Rich won his, but anyway, we got a win for the team. So
nice. We won't go into our last round because we ended up getting matched up with Not Snakes Gaming, and then we had, I think it was, I don't know, one of the judges randomly just picked our pairings because we were just
all... Well, yeah, because you guys were taking it all serious. It was the end of the day. You guys are pulling out matrixes, and we're like, no, just whatever. We don't care. Just do it. So Devin took our cards, shuffled them, and put them down. I ended up with Brad. Attilio ended up with Ryan, and you had Rich.
I did, yeah. I got crushed. I don't really need to talk about that game. It was Kaya 3, Siege 2, and he just mulched all my trenchers.
Attilio into Ryan. He forgot about Field Marshal Countercharge, and it just went bad for him.
Yeah.
And then me playing into Brad. So again, I had Kolgrimma and Borka 1. He had Asphyxius 2 and Denny 1. Mm-hmm. I figured Borka 1 was the right drop, even though I felt like Kolgrimma may have had more tools going into the matchup. And then you put down Asphyxius 2. It was really bad for me.
Yeah, so my reasoning for it is, Pete, correct me if I'm wrong, your other list was also kind of B-centric, right?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, so list 2, because all the Banes like and like limited amounts of RFP does really well in the Beast Bricks, because even if I kind of lose in the initial trading, my feet will bring me back to even. And if I'm already winning on the initial trading, my feat like puts me way ahead. So nothing in your list could really see through clouds. So there was already a fairly decent sized sparse in the middle of the table, and then with the additional clouds that Lich could put down, I basically blocked line of sight to everything that I didn't want you to see every turn.
Yep.
Yep.
So I was allowed to charge and you never could, so it was Yeah.
We did get to learn that Valka Curseborn has every fucking rule in the game.
Yeah, I didn't know that had to be such a high target going into it. Like, I was like, oh, that's a cool new solo. And then you went over everything it did. I'm like, fuck, that thing's gotta die.
Yeah.
So I kind of overcommitted for it, I think, on turn two or three. And I think I lost, like, a couple of Bane Warriors in a Bane Rider form. But ultimately, I think worth it.
Yep. So, Mike, on to the championship round. You guys get, luckily, all the pair downs. We were only going to go four rounds because that was a concern. That we would have to go five, and we didn't, and you guys got paired up against Fricka and Friends, which was Zach Keller Coffee, Chris Fricka, and Derek Apshe. So how did that go?
Yeah, and quick shout out to Two Priests and a Butcher. Rob, Jason, and Paul were the ones that defeated the pair down in their round, so they were the reason that we could all go home after four rounds. So
yep.
Thanks again.
Yep, good job, guys.
So our pairings ended up, let's see what Zach was playing.
He had Old Witch 3.
Yeah, and Winter Guard Command and Butcher 3 and Jaws.
Yeah.
Yep, so I think it was Old Witch, I think it's 2. Yeah, Witch 2 is Kador.
Yep.
Old Witch 2 versus Klinger's Grimkin. We had Harrison played into Furka's Protectorate. I think that was another Butcher 3 into Protectorate something. And then I played to Derek Apshe, Kallus 2 versus, I think it was Alara 2.
Yeah, I think you played Alara your last round. I'm pretty sure.
Yep, can confirm.
So, yeah, so that was a really close game. That was actually the round that I dropped the game. So it was my team carrying me, you know, across the finish line there. Played a very, very close game against Kallus 2. Fed him my Cantric Force Generator, which I think he got pretty excited about. He was able to overrun and walk Zuriel into the AFG and just barely kill it. It's actually not guaranteed that he kills it. It's likely, but he needs fairly average dice to get it done. so it was a pretty good trade that I was excited about. Because and then the other thing is that Zuriel has to end up like dug into where I am.
Right.
So I was able to easily trade Zuriel out. And then we just kind of traded back and forth. It ended up a very, very close scenario game. I was winning on attrition. And it would have eventually went my way. But he had just a turn up on me. You know, there were a couple of dice rolls, a couple of solos that stayed alive when I needed them to die. Got huge work out of the Sirens. They were amazing. Shooting down Raptors and having Raptors killing Raptors felt pretty good. So I think those are a very solid addition to the list.
Yeah. And so you guys win back-to-back, so the trophy stays in Philly. So congrats, because that was a tough field.
Yeah, we also got to talk Klinger's game. Klinger pulled out his win against Old Witch. Yeah, it was the one that mattered, you know. So Klinger was definitely the hero of the day, carried us through the round, and we were lucky to have him on our team, even after his initial stutter steps.
It's funny that you say that, because, you know, it all goes away. He wins the last game, and everything's fine.
Yeah, that's how it works, right?
Like, yeah, no, definitely. So real quick, I just want to talk about and get everybody's thoughts about the format. So we played in both a WTC style and then this German style. How did everybody feel about this versus the other?
So the three-man WTC style, it felt like we had way more control with the matchups.
Mm-hmm.
And I think almost to a detriment, because you could definitely pick, you know, what you wanted going into it. I really kind of liked the unknown aspect of this. And I thought it was neat to be able to, you know, we rolled the dice and then like, oh, we're getting this table. Well, I definitely want to be there. Vice, you know, you would one side pick tables and then you put down the matchup. So I think they both have merits, but it definitely felt like the three-man WTC style is more abusable.
Yeah, and that's a little bit the reason behind the decision of switching to this one, to this format, or at least trialing this format, was that the advantage of choosing the extra matchup is exponentially better in a three-man team versus a five-man team. So it felt pretty tilted towards the whoever wins the go-first role had too big of an advantage in the pairing process.
Yeah, I mean, as far as impact goes, as far as decision making and impact on that, I felt that, you know, this is in between just your typical team tournament where you get your team feat, otherwise you play their first, second, or third player, and then the other end of the spectrum being WTC style. I felt this was a nice medium ground in between the two. I didn't mind this one. I enjoyed it, and if somebody told me they were going to play, if we were going to do this next year, I wouldn't have an issue with it. I like them both, to be honest. Now that I've played in them both, I think they're fine. I think I lean a little bit more towards the WTC one, but that's not to take anything away from this. I think this format's fine.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, like I said, there's advantages and disadvantages to both. Yeah, I think before we move on from the mat, we just need to do one more proper shout out. The officiating crew was absolutely fantastic. It was Devin, Sheridan, and our official judge, Nate Cook, all contributed and made the event as great as it was. You know, we had 18 teams total, I believe, and we finished the event in with kind of just 1 hour of flux time. We started it at 10 and we were out of there like right around 7. So they did a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
It included a painting competition, which I was pretty happy with.
Until you dropped all your models.
Yeah.
It was a victory spike.
Oh, yeah, it was a victory spike. Say again?
I missed that. Your models fell?
Yeah, I dropped a tray as I was putting them away.
When's a painting competition spikes as shit?
Yep. Oh, yeah, you like this brawler? Sweet! Smash! And then we went to go, at the recommendation of Brad and Nate and Corey, I guess, we went over to get some Ethiopian food afterwards, which I had never had before. And
delicious.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had a little fire poop the next day, but otherwise it was great.
Ethiopian is great. Like, here in Southwest Philly, where the area we were in has weirdly like 5 or 6 very excellent Ethiopian places all within a couple of blocks of each other.
Yeah. I thought it was really funny when we were going to go Ethiopian. It wasn't just like we're going to the place. They had to specify which one. That's how I knew where we were.
Very true.
Yeah.
Cause everyone was asking which one we're going to. And Nate had to reassure everyone that we're going to the good one.
Yeah, that was concerning.
Yeah, then your follow-up question is like, well, which good one?
And Kat enjoyed it too, you said, right?
She did.
Nice. All right, so let's move on. All in all, I think it was a great, successful tournament and can't wait for it next year. It was a blast. So, Brad, I think this was kind of your topic that we had kind of pushed back, and I'll just let you introduce it and jump into it.
Yeah, so just after kind of some conversation spurred online, I think it's kind of relevant. I think it's probably different how you address it, maybe online and in person. But I think it is worthwhile to talk about how to both give advice and how to receive advice. There'll be certainly times where there's things to learn. And I think a great example, just to use myself as an example real quick, was just this game from this past weekend when I played against Cole. Like, the thing to learn about that game is how to protect my caster when, like, I'm already ahead. Like, I was winning the game. All I had to do is not have my caster die, and I had my caster die.
Do you want to get into the context of where this came from, or do you want
to? Yeah, sure. So, okay. If for anyone that saw the post, I think on the Cricks page, where someone was saying like a Void Spirit killed like 50 points worth of models. I think I was lucky enough to be the second commenter, and all I said was space better. And some people took mighty offense to that, to the effect of like, I shouldn't be so condescending. Wherein I think my advice of spacing better is legitimate advice. Like, if you don't want to your opponent's free model, because a despoiler made it, to not kill half your list, don't have it so I can walk through all of them. But that like applies in so many other facets of this game. Like, if you don't want to lose four heavies, don't line up in charge range of your opponent's heavies. Like, it doesn't matter what the model is or like what strength your opponent is using to leverage their advantages. Like, if you don't want to just lose all of your games, don't play into your opponent's strengths. I think I can think back to when I was only been playing this game for like 2 or 3 months. At the time, I still only owned Mort Neighbor 1. I started with Mort Neighbor and Cricks in Mark 2. And I played against someone running Kalandra and the Pig Burrowers, which were much different than their Mark 3 versions. I didn't have so any much. Idea what the fuck they did. And I saw little like pig models. I'm like, what the fuck are they going to do? So like, I move forward and I position to like threaten his line. His Pig Burrowers come out of the ground. There's about 7 souls in the list that all give them additional rules and Kalandra feats. And I started my next turn losing all 5 of my heavies. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? So ever since then, like, it's always been relevant to like learn what your opponent's models do, so you don't just like walk into all of their strengths, which I did. Like, I was losing Crick's heavies to 2 pig burrows at a time. It's like, these 2 go here, these 2 go here, dead heavy, dead heavy, dead heavy, dead heavy. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, I think you need to be able to, because I've had this issue, I think everyone may have been there, where you get convinced that you're doing something the right way. So somebody goes to try to offer the advice to you, and you almost turn it down because that's the way you've been doing it, either via muscle memory or whatever. You think that that is right, and so you dismiss it. And go ahead.
And plus, to be fair, if my dice weren't shit, then it wouldn't have happened that way anyway. So
right, right, and that.
Yeah, part of the other issue here too is that, especially in the gamer community in general, not just for this game, you know, that whole idea of, you know, we'll get good like that, and that being more of an insult than anything else, even if it's true the way it's said. I think that the one line, even though it's correct advice, you know, spacing, you just don't be there. The delivery on that one especially, even beyond like, well, you should have done this with this model or that. It's such a short thing of just don't be there. And in this scenario, because spacing plays such an important game in the goal, it's a legitimate like, that's just don't be
sure.
There.
So,
but
like,
I can see how someone could take that as a get good kind of statement.
I 100% agree, but like, to use this like as the example with the Void Spirit, like, it's a model that's a 0.5 inch melee range. If they're going through that many models, they're not only are they in base to base, like, they're probably in like some sort of spiral that like spins in on itself. Like, it's almost impossible to go through that many models. Like, if it's Mark II Gearlock on their Scar 1, like, it's tough to fucking avoid that Pac-Man, like a 2 inch reach model on a medium base.
Just to play devil's advocate, we do have to keep in mind, you know, so if this, in case this guy's listening, he doesn't completely lose his mind, because the Void Spirit does get a teleport. So
yes.
It
gets a single one. Yeah. So it's 2 sets of like micro Pac-Man. So it does have the half inch reach. But it's I've been on the receiving end of it, and it is a very strong model, you know. But like you said, it's something you just need to think about for the whole game and never forget about, or you lose.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%, but, like, I think, and I'm not even talking, like, outside of this Void Spirit thing, like, I think, like, as a game, and I know that we shouldn't point to this because it was, like, sexist in its nature, but, like, the old page 5 thing, like, models in this game are meant to do a lot. Like, if you play into the strengths of your opponent, you're pretty much always going to lose. There's never going to be an upside to that. So what I'm getting at is, like, when you lose a game, like, it's not because a model's broken, like, I think there's very few cases when a model is actually to the point to where it's too good better than it should be by like a large margin.
Denny won.
Let me just stop you right there for a second, Brad, and just reiterate what you said. You know, when you lose a game, it's not always because a model's broken.
Right.
I just think it sounds better coming from a non-Crix player, so carry on.
I appreciate that, Mike. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, like, just no matter what it is, like, I think the last time we can point to, like, a clear, like, this model's absolutely fucking busted is maybe the Una 2 release.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I think so.
I don't know if I'm wrong with another model that's, like, straight out of the bag, like, this is,
I think that's the horseshit. Most recent, yeah.
She was pretty egregious, yeah. So back to your original question, like how to improve, when to get advice, when to receive advice, when to give advice. When you're posting online, it's a little bit different. In my opinion, it's kind of a free-for-all, like people are going to give you advice whether you ask or not. I think at the table, I personally don't say very much after a win unless my opponent asks me about it.
Right, that is not my microphone.
That was great.
What was that?
Did you go to work, Mike?
No, that wasn't me.
What?
It was me.
Was it me?
Ryan?
Ryan.
North Korea.
All right. Ryan.
Ryan's not going to answer.
Ryan died and got replaced,
Mike,
with a Korean
robot. You might want to say that thing over where you don't give advice unless they ask for it.
Right. So for me, I don't particularly tend to say very much at all, advice or otherwise, after win at the table unless approached directly by my opponent. Some people get like really pissed, and that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I hate when I lose, so you can definitely get upset about a loss, but you don't want to like just go soliciting advice to somebody that's like already salty about your game and you're the reason that they lost, you know?
Yeah.
So be cautious at the table. Online is a free for all. But the important thing I think is you really want to look at your wins also. And I think that's something that I hear time and time again, people don't appreciate. Because I'll come away from a win and look at all the things I did wrong and be like upset and be like, oh man, I've kind of played like shit. Like, I wish I'd done all these things differently. And I've had opponents say to me like, well, you won, so why does it matter? It's like, oh, well, that's like, there's a big difference there, because even though I won, like, it still matters if I'm making mistakes in my games. You know, like, no game is perfect. And that's how you can refine your abilities and continue to learn and improve even off of a win.
Right. You can win a game just because somebody runs their caster forward in Camp Zero and you kill them, but everything else you did in that game was shit. Well, that's not something you are going to bank on going forward. Like, you need to correct the things you did wrong, because any other dipshit isn't going to do that with your caster and give you that easy, you know, the way to go.
Absolutely. There's things to learn from both wins and losses, you know, and I think both are equally important.
I like what you said about not soliciting advice when you won, because, I could see how that, like, hey, not only did I just win, but I'm going to tell you what you should have done differently while you're over there thinking the same thing. I could see how that could go south real quick with some people.
Right, exactly. And there's like so many variables there, because like you said, especially if they already see what's going wrong, they're just going to get like pissed. Like, yes, then they're going to, you know, it's a bit condescending. You know, there's just, it's just a whole like social quagmire that, you know, I'm not going to jump into unless I get invited.
So if I lose, I almost always ask for advice and talk about the game. I don't know that there's a game, unless I can tell that my opponent is mad because of dice, or, you know, really, really like throwing shit around mad, I almost always try to talk at least a little bit about the game. And like you said, not so much if I win, not solicit the advice, but especially if I lose, I really try to just, okay, so if I do this, what, you know, and really just try to get in and ask and try to just learn from that, because I don't remember my games like you guys do, so like I almost have to take what's said there on the spot and just absorb that, because the rest of it's gonna go in 2 days.
And that's a little bit better way of going about it. You always should try and debrief your games, but not everybody can do that. You need to recognize that, like, in the social environment, you know, these games bring us to.
Sure. I don't know, Pete, hop in. Ryan, what do you guys got on this?
It's interesting. And it's definitely a difficult thing. Because obviously, you know, like you said, like, okay, perfect example. I played Mike up at Portal. It was our first time ever playing. I had a Grim One list with two kings. He played that Devil list of Alara 3 with the three Halberdiers. And we're going along, and I
Mike's
go
in the okay. fucking future. So it's Alora 2.
Yeah. What did I say?
3.
Okay. Yeah. No, Alora with 3 halberdiers.
Oh. Okay. Sure.
Whatever. Anyway,
semantics.
Like. Yeah. And mid game, we're talking, and I say, all right, if you strip both kings, then I'm gonna shake your hand. And that's exactly what happened. And Mike just was like, okay, that's the game. And he's like packing up. And then I go, okay, well, how could I have avoided that? And then that's when he started talking. And, you know, we were discussing back and forth, like how that could have been prevented. And I really appreciated that, because then the next game, I played against somebody, and right away, as soon as the dice was rolled, they were like, yeah, I really did this, I did that, I did this. And I'm like, I am not ready for that feedback quite yet. Let me adjust, you know, let me calm down, and then we can talk about it. So,
and
yeah, I definitely appreciate Mike's approach.
And I think we need to definitely separate, and we kind of already did that, but live feedback versus the internet. I mean, when you post on the Facebook groups, and they're great places, they can be great places at times. But if you go in with the approach of saying, this is broken, this is garbage, and all of my shit died, the feedback you're going to get is not going to be very positive. And even with Brad's comment, Brad probably could have worded that a little better. What he said was true.
I made it succinct and short. It was the best advice he probably got in that whole thing.
Agreed. I don't disagree. But I could see how some, you know, that could come off where it's just like a get good type of comment. And it is really difficult. I've gone in the Signar group for a lot of advice, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it isn't. And that, I think you just have to be prepared to accept that. And sometimes you're going to get it even when you don't want it, which is a little different in person. Sometimes you can avoid that, but I at least for the, when we're talking internet feedback, I always try to keep it positive. I really don't try to get in like somebody's face and just be like, hey, you know, hey, fuck you. Like, don't. Yeah. Yeah. Void Spirit killed all your stuff. Like, got space better. Come on, guy.
The thing about internet feedback, obviously, and this is on both sides, you could be the most well-intentioned thing. It is so easy to misinterpret anything because it's just text. There's no voice. There's no any kind of emotion to go with it. And if you're already on tilt a little bit, like, or you have a preconception of what the feedback you should be getting is, it's so easy to just take stuff the wrong way. So like, I think that positive thing has to be on both sides of the coin. It's not just giving positive, but you kind of got to give the person who's giving you any advice, especially on the internet, the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I mean, these groups can get a little contentious, and there can be a lot of salt. People can complain a lot, and it can get really ugly really quick. I personally try to just approach everything like as positive as I can be until somebody starts really, really hammering and being a dick. Like, up until that point, like, I'm going to try to be the nicest and give the most positive feedback that I can, so that, you know, because, you know, like Ryan, you said, you don't know how somebody's going to interpret that over the text, and that can get a little tricky, but we've separated that. I think everyone knows how to handle that shit. Let's go back to in-person feedback. We got anything else on that, Mike?
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, you know, if they ask, you know, and if you're in entering the discussion, you know, you can definitely point out things they did well. You know, like, nobody just wants to hear about how they got shit on, especially after they got shit on. You know, so definitely let them know and give credit where it's due. Let them know what frustrated you, what you were afraid of. That's the other thing, is that perceived threat, I think, is important in War Machine. So if there's things they did correctly or almost correctly, or you can just let them know things you were worried about. For example, and, you know, Brad's Haley 1, if he had teleported that backwards, point that out to your opponent. Be like, well, you could have gotten me here, but I did this small thing so that you couldn't. You know, but that was very well positioned with, you know, your Arc Node and your Haley, you know, whatever was threatening his caster. So if Brad had seen that and backpedaled, you know, accordingly, definitely point those types of plays out to your opponents so that they know, you know, what they've got down and what they're doing correctly. And then just kind of help them work through the things that you did well and ways to prevent that one.
I think the perceived threat, that's a great point. I've had so many conversations with people post game where the things we were worried about were completely opposite of each other. You know, the thing that he thought I was should have been worried about, I didn't care. And the thing I was most worried about was the thing he, you know, that comes up a lot. And that is really important. That's really valuable feedback to get from people.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. Like, yeah, certainly what Mike was saying, like, you want to have your opponent willing to take advice. But like, I know at the end of my losses, I think my first question, as soon as like before we even fill out sheets, is like, what could I have done differently? I am always looking for the advice. I like talking about this game, I like learning about this game. Shit, I mean, we're all in this fucking podcast. I think that's probably true for all of us. I don't think I actually understand the player that doesn't want to talk about the game and just gets upset and just like leaves and doesn't want to talk about it. Like, unless they know their own mistakes and they're upset with themselves, like, I guess that's fine.
So Brad, can I ask Roka? I didn't follow that thread. Did it end up being valuable at all? That any feedback like of having him help?
No. So help like space the better, thing or... is like the thread started with a guy complaining, saying a model was broken. It's like ridiculous what we did to Biothralls or whatever shit right. was that. Like, so the thread didn't start off with like looking for criticism. It was just like complain.thread.
Well, that was always going to be a negative experience then.
Right. No? So the me giving advice wasn't even the whole biggest thing. Even if you didn't perceive it to be advice, the whole thread was like people saying things, basically what I said, albeit some people said it much nicer. Was that like these effects exist in the game, be it, I mean, Garlock still has it. Really, anything with overtake and the ability to make more attacks or buy more attacks, if it's like Tharn with heart tokens or whatever, it doesn't really matter what it is. So, like, those effects let you go through an army with one model exists. And, like, the way you let that not happen is either give the models they can't bounce off of, like, put your lights and heavies in front of them. So they'll charge it and get damage in, but they're not going to go to another model. Or, like, just make it so that they kill one or two guys and then can't get to anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, e-leaps are another thing where I can't mulch your whole army. But if I have enough e-leaps, I'll kill a whole unit if you don't space properly. You know?
Right. So people were saying that. And then the rest of the comments were like people jumping in saying like, you know, you don't have to be so condescending with your answers. And like there was never anything productive out of it. Like,
OK, yeah, I didn't follow it after you commented. I remember laughing at that. And then that was it. So I didn't know if it ever turned into him asking for how to handle better or anyone giving anything or if it literally just was here's PP. You made a shitty model.
The thread was started by a guy that was watching the game. He wasn't even playing in the game. And I don't think there was anyone ever looking for advice. But once advice was given, which was like by probably over half the, like the original comments that then had like replies off of them, it was like people giving advice to how to let that not happen or just saying like the thing isn't broken and like you let your opponent kill your army.
Right.
Like it wasn't like a necessarily like great tone to the whole conversation. But at the same time, like if you're even if like you were the player that had your army get mulched by a void spirit, like if you're going to go in there and say like, I don't understand how like a void spirit is like a fair and balanced model. And like someone tells you space, but that's all they say. Maybe that should like reflect on you and go like, maybe there's something to that. Because if it wasn't like, here's the other thing, right? Like I haven't seen complaints about like Pac-Maning through armies, be it with whatever model it is. Really at all this like entire edition, like just not too. A problem. Sure, Madrak 2 maybe yeah. Another example of like something that was just like way too good and got appropriately sconed.
I mean that was way too good because there even if you tried to protect yourself, there was so many things for them to be just like, no, your whole faction has no way of protecting yourself, get wrecked.
What was it that you taught me, Mike? I had to have like an 11 inch bubble from my caster to the next closest model.
Yeah, something like that. You need to make fire cuts. Well, you used to need to make little fire cuts in your units. It was like absolutely insane. You weren't even really playing War Machine anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, aside from that, thank you for correcting. Aside from that, like these things exist and like losing two units to it is definitely not something that should be able to be repeated. Like learn your mistake once, similar to like what I did with Mortenaber and Pig Burrowers in Mark II. And like, go like, oh shit, that sucks, and move on.
Yeah. Well, real quick, and then we'll get out of here. But Pete, I mean, you play with your son and wife. I mean, at least weekly. I assume somewhat close to daily. I mean, I'm sure at some point you guys have had contentious games. You know.
Oh, you mean like right now? I keep throwing Cole Grima into the Dreamer. And it's a very, very tough matchup because the Dreamer has everything that Cole Grima doesn't want to see. And the main thing to understand, and it's really tough, is that any of the, like, the person that you're playing against, they're just playing a game. They're trying to have fun. And unfortunately, you're going to have these bad matchups, and it's hard not to take it out on them. And especially, you know, this is my family. Like, why am I getting mad at them when we're supposed to be enjoying this? Like, we could be doing a million other things than playing this game. So it's hard. It is truly hard.
So you have beaten Attilio over the Dreamer. That is fucked up.
No, there's been no physical contact yet.
You get it? It's good as long as we just keep it in the realm.
I guess where I was going with that was, this is, you know, so you guys have had to have had games that were necessarily, you know, maybe it got heated. I mean, how do you guys approach? Do you talk about every single game when you're done? Is there always, like, how do you approach the advice from that perspective where you're playing with the same two people, you know, so often?
It's the exact same thing that Mike talked about. Like, you don't want to give unsolicited advice. You know, you definitely need a cooling off period if you've had a game that, like, just everything got answered, and, you know, that you were trying to play, that your opponent had an answer for everything. So there's a lot of that quiet packing of an army while you're standing there, you know, trying to be like, please don't hate me, I'm sorry, you know. So yeah, you just need to have a cooling off period, and then it's time to talk about the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that can always be awkward too, where, like, your opponent.
Oh, the quiet packing.
Yeah, the quiet packing. Yeah. Yeah.
they've said nothing and you don't want to start.
Yeah.
Quietly pack with them.
What we've tried to start doing is if we can identify that a game is going south, and I know this doesn't help for a tournament, but if we can identify that's going south, we'll go ahead and stop and reset, because there's no sense playing for the next half hour to 45 minutes if you can tell what the outcome is going to be and it's somebody being frustrated.
There's nothing worse than someone makes a mistake, has like a unit hobbled or an army hobbled, but the person who's taking advantage of the mistake can't end the game there. So you then literally play an entire game where the outcome is, I have to hope you make a horrific mistake so I can get back in this game.
You mean like when they're going to win anyway, but then they shoot Iris 1 at your caster with no intention of ever actually winning? they just did it just for fun?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
Mike?
Like that. Well, in a tournament, you can't stop playing those games.
Correct.
You can. You can scoop.
No, I would never. It was fine. I was just, everybody was like, the people around me were like, what the fuck? I'm like, he's just being a dick. Like, he's going to win and it's me, so it's fine. Like, it's, you know, if it was anybody else, I might actually be mad, but I, you know, it's Mike, so this doesn't bother me. It's just like, you're going to win on scenario. You're like, Iris will shoot Siege just because. Like, fuck you.
See if we can get him.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think those are some really good points, and it can be hard. Knowing the time, especially when it's people you don't know, and you don't know their tics, so you don't necessarily know whether they, maybe they just don't talk. Maybe they enjoy quietly packing up their models, but they want to talk about the game. Like, it's totally different if it's not somebody in your local meta. I know when Ryan is pissed. I've played Ryan for so many years in so many different games. I know when it's time to not talk about a game. But it's,
yeah, and that's the thing, is I don't think if anybody wants to talk about the game afterwards, I don't think they're going to sit there quietly, you know, and then be like, oh, damn, I should have said something to that guy. They want to talk about the game afterwards. They usually talk about the game afterwards. So if they say nothing, just
they
leave it.
Don't. Yeah, I just meant just because, you know, there's so many different people that you like, who fucking knows? But yeah, you're right. They'll be talking if they want to talk about it. So what do we got? Anything else, guys? Any Pete, what do you got coming on the channel?
We actually are taking the week off. We're going to try and stream a game this Saturday and test out our live stream capability. And then we're going to start recording. So if you are listening and within earshot and driving distance, please hit us up on Facebook. And we're off between Christmas and New Year's. And I want to get as many games recorded with people as I can.
Nice. So check that out at Not Snakes Gaming on YouTube. Mike, have you been doing your blog, or did that start and then kind of fade?
Faded a little bit. I have plans to bring it back. I've been doing a lot of painting recently, so there have been like little trickle updates of models that I'm working on, and that's starting to come to a close. So the holiday season is extraordinarily busy for me, so it's been a little bit harder to find the time to get that taken care of.
Yeah, hospitals get kind of fucked around this time, especially psych wards, as I am to understand from my wife.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. So then we got tournaments in January, and then Captain Con starts the tourney scene. So that's exciting. Start prepping for that. I think that's a cast, though, unless anybody has anything else quick they wanted to talk about.
I ain't got shit.
I think that's it.
That sounds great. Well, thanks for listening, you guys. I probably won't see almost any of you before Monday, so I hope you guys have a good Christmas and some time off.
Thanks for coming on, Mike.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Yeah, we'll have to, I keep saying it, we got to get you back on a lot more often, but, you know, we only have a 45-minute window to record, so it gets tough.
45-minute start window, you know, it gets a little bit flexible as long as you start within that.
That is true. That is true. It does get better. So, all right. So thanks for listening. I'm Grant.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Third.
I'm Pete. Mike.
Oh, the Mike Pete again.
Oh, good old Mike Pete.
God damn it.
All right.
Did we just start calling him Meep?
Meep.
No, we don't do that.